Welcome back to the show. This is Coach's Corner, and I'm Brian Craven. I want to thank all of you across this great nation for listening, for spending a little time with me. I've got a great show for you today. Taking a little bit of a break. We've taken a few days off. I have been working very hard on the off-season playbook for the Lone Star Glory. It's a big job. I've got some people that I don't want to let down. My teammates, Charles and Wally. I feel very blessed that they brought me in. I knew it was going to be a big job. I knew it was going to take a lot of work. I am excited. Can't wait to start the season. We've got a scrimmage later today. You may have already seen it by the time this episode airs. I hope you'll join us. Got a great show for you today. I have Slynn Shady, linebacker for Las Vegas, and also the GM, and he's wearing his GM hat today. We're going to talk about the draft. We're going to talk a little bit different, got a little bit different perspective than some of the other folks out there, talking about a couple of little things that maybe didn't quite get touched on in some of the other shows. So I hope you'll take the time. It's a nice long show, so get your snacks, get your drinks, relax, and settle in, and let's hear what Slynn Shady has to say. And we are back with Coach's Corner. We've got a GM that we've had on the show before, one of my favorite interviews, actually. You know him as Slynn Shady. His parents call him Matthew, I believe he said. And I probably should have asked before we started recording if he wants that out in the public. If he doesn't, then I'll start all over. Do you mind being called Matt in public?
Oh, it's a bit late now, isn't it, whether I do or not?
It kind of is. Well, I just start over and erase this bit, but
Matthew's my preferred go-to.
Okay, Matthew. All right. I might be wrong. I thought I saw you say only your parent called you Matthew or something.
Yeah, they do. And everyone else in my life calls me Slinny.
Okay.
That's my name according to 95% of the population that I know.
Well, then I guess I might have to shift gears and go back to that. I just kind of assumed that was an SFL persona.
Slynn Shady is not a name that I'd go by. I don't mind it in the league, but in real life, you know, if you introduce yourself as that, it comes across as a bit corny.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, we got a lot to talk about, and it's pretty much all with your GM hat on. For those that may not know, you're also a linebacker in the league, but you've been a GM several times. You are back into that role with Las Vegas. Why don't we start out, before we dive into the questions, why don't you talk a little bit about Las Vegas? We've probably talked about it before, but what appealed to you about going to Las Vegas in the off season, going from Seattle, to matter of fact?
I think, obviously, to tell the truth, had Seattle stayed as a team, there's a good chance. I mean, I loved being in Seattle, and there's a good chance I would have stayed there because the team atmosphere was so good. The locker room was great, and I think that's a big part of why most people left, because they felt such a brotherhood that they couldn't imagine being anywhere else. I'd been there for one season, and I don't know, I can't really exactly recall how I got talking to Vegas. I know every off season, with my linebacker being quite a good player, 5 straight All-Star games, just saying. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of people asking me if I'm going to move on next season, and I think Vegas may have just approached, and we just talked. I think I kind of just mentioned that, you know, I want to get back into the GM game. The only way I'll probably stay in the league long term is if I become a GM again. And they, you know, Tom Raman moving up to the roster, I don't know what the official title is is a stat leader.
Roster excellence or something on the
roster excellence. Yeah, slightly arrogant. I'm not going to lie, but
his typical flair he brings to it. I like it.
Yeah, typical quarterback. Yeah, so with him moving up to that, I think he'd be too busy to be a GM. So they had an opening, and you know, once I'd had a few conversations with John, the owner, and then Merrick or Tony, who's going to be the defensive coordinator, it just seemed like a good fit. I thought, you know what, take a chance, take a punt. And since I've gone in, they've been nothing but welcoming. We've fit in like a hand to a glove, and it's been a really positive experience. I'm enjoying the league as more, if not at least as much, as I've ever done.
Good.
And you know, I think feeling really positive about the next, at least the next two, hopefully three seasons.
Okay, nice. Well, we've had a lot. There's a lot of new things to work with, which is part of what we're doing this show about, is to talk about some of this stuff. So that's encouraging. That's exciting that you are enjoying it so much in your new setting.
How are you feeling over in Lone Star? I mean, all the guys in Lone Star seem to be having a great time. So right. I imagine you're just rolling on that wave.
Yes, I do love it. I think I said on a recent show that this was my SFL dream come true, to be on a team with a bunch of like-minded individuals.
So sweet, Brian.
Well, it's that's what I always want. You know, I mean, I was a high school coach for 20 years, and
yes.
I was a couple of places. I always enjoyed coaching, but the ones that really, you know, really got in, really got under my skin, were the ones where we had a brotherhood. You mentioned the word brotherhood, talked about the Seattle locker room.
Yes.
And the last place that I coached, part of why I left it, and this is not, I doubt they'll ever hear this, and if they do, their feelings won't be hurt. We had a new coach come in, and he brought in a lot of his guys, a new head coach, and he brought in a lot of his guys, which I don't object to at all. I mean, if I was a head coach at somewhere tomorrow, I'm calling all of my guys and bringing them in, because yeah. you spend so much time together, you're working together so closely.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, but I left because it wasn't the same group. It wasn't the I found it had become a job. It had become a job. It wasn't something that I was excited about like I had been. And so that's the thing with when I wake up, I'm going about my morning, I'm doing my stuff, and I'm catching up on all the stuff. You know, I'm on the West Coast of the United States, and everybody else is on the East Coast. Well, except for my bass brother, Doug. He's on the West Coast as well. So, you know, both of us, we wake up, and there's about 30 or 40 messages in the locker room and saying good morning and all that stuff.
That's
and then
great.
The other, you know, and yeah. And so, but I love it. I love all of that stuff. And, we're the voice channel almost every night. We definitely did a goofy little thing with the 2K basketball game where I put all the Lone Star guys on a team.
Yes, I remember you saying about that.
Right, So all of that stuff is great, and I'm enjoying it a lot. And I left Vancouver because of Charles Daugherty. So, I get to work with Charles and talk to Charles virtually every day. I'm kind of rambling now. I'm having a great time. I love it. And
you ramble all you want. It's your show. It's your show, mate.
There we go. People might not care to listen if I ramble too much. It just goes
back to that thing about, you know, you put a lot of work into something. If you're enjoying it with the people who you're working with, then it just makes life so much easier, and you probably end up doing a better job.
It really does. Well, and I think about, we talk about. I remember early on when I joined the league, people talking about fit a lot. Now it makes sense. It's not an obscure abstract concept to talk about fit, but you really see how much it matters. And I think that's going to come up in our discussion about the draft and the offseason as well, because there's a lot of things, the panelists or whatnot. And I'm not mad at any of the panelists for anything they said. or anything like that. But you're listening sometimes, you're going, well, guys, you don't know. You know, you weren't there. You haven't heard the conversations. You don't know what we're talking about. This is a fit. This other guy might have more value, and I'm using air quotes, not to us. This guy has value. And have a pick. You have a pick exactly that fits that, which we'll get to.
I was just going to say that, you know, even in the NFL or any sport, there's, the media is full of loud, uneducated voices, and you know it's kind of realistic that the SFL is just the same. Not going to name any names, but I think there's a place for it. And I won't lie, you know, I watched especially round one, despite sort of the reaction that the pick got, I found it really entertaining. The two things that entertained me most was, you know, the reaction to my pick coming up, because I was so, and the anticipation was building, and the other thing was your hair. Those locks, that Corona cut, I loved it. Really, really entertaining.
The last time I had hair with that kind of length, it was black, not gray. So
it suits you.
Yeah, I've got a wedding to go to next weekend, and the odds are I'm just going to have it back in a ponytail, because I'm probably not going to get a cut between now and then.
You go hilarious.
I look like a former Grateful Dead roadie or something. Well, it's funny you mentioned that pick. I went back and watched the draft, the round one draft, for the first time since doing it, and I saw my reaction. I leaned back and was like, "Oh," but it's funny because I had interviewed Jess and I knew him, and I knew that was a heck of a pick, and so and I knew immediately why. But my reaction was partly thinking in the back of the moment, it was, oh, people are gonna be shocked by that one, you know.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping for that as well. I didn't want any sort of I didn't want Jess to cop too much flack for that, because you know it's nothing to do with him. I mean, at the end of the day, he's done a great job.
Oh yeah,
we picked him for that reason and did a great job of. I don't think he didn't even need to advertise himself. He advertised himself through his actions. He didn't advertise himself through talking to individual gems, I don't think. So kind of that proved to me that someone's advertised themselves just by being in the league and who they are. Then that's exactly what you need. You can't. He's a genuine, genuine great person, and he clearly, you know, he loves the league already, and I think he just loves being in Vegas, you know, because we give him a chance. We've put the faith in him, so I think he really appreciates that. And that was kind of, you can feel it, it's palpable within him. So, you know, it was a big pick, and if I could do it 100 times again, I'd do the exact same thing.
Nice. Well, you, you know, we've got a little bit of an outline here, some things we want to talk about, but let's go first with Las Vegas as a whole, because Jess wasn't the only good pick you made. I felt like you guys did a very good job. I don't remember what the grade you guys got, what from the guys.
I know.
I'm sure you do. What grade did they give you?
We got a B+.
B plus. Okay, which was one of the higher ones. Yeah.
It's above average. I think the average would be, I think the average was probably a B-, judging on the and to be fair, just saying about that show, those guys did a great job.
You know,
Scouts Inc. It's hot, especially when the rookies as well themselves, they're new to the league, a lot of them, they might have been here for season 14 as well, but you know, they've put so much into it. And whether I agree with a B+ or not, that doesn't really matter. I mean, obviously, I'm going to think it's higher than a B+. But, they can only go off what they know. And they're looking from an outside lens. I was happy with a B+. If we'd have got lower than a B, then I would have been a little bit skeptical of the grade. But, yeah, B+ was fine. I was quite happy with that.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we talk about it a little bit? Talk about give some love to your team and to your picks. So obviously round one, Jess, we talked about that a lot. Why? Make perfect sense. Do you have anything more you'd like to add to about him, or do you want to move on and talk to me? I'm going to let you run with it. So just go through your picks and tell me about them, what, as much or as little as you'd like.
Okay, so I think I'm going to use Jess. I'm not going to say anything more about him per se, but I'm going to use it to plug the YouTube channel that he's set up for Vegas. So Vegas now has a YouTube channel, and he's made a highlights package for the scrimmage we had against Fort Worth. He's basically, our social media has already blown up massively because of his involvement. And then we'll move on to round two. So round two, we couldn't do what Lone Star did and get a running back in the supplemental, because we'd taken, we couldn't use the bonus, basically.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, we would have taken a running back and not been able to boost him at all. So it would have been obviously a base copper, which at such an important position is not
tough to do.
Ideal.
Yeah.
So the process was a long process to get the right guy for that. Initially, might as well say now, initially we were, Fox was the obvious target, Fox Highland. And, early on in the process, we were looking to even trade up to make sure we got him. We had trades in place with London. I nearly secured trades with Fort Worth and Portland even for the 1 and 2, because I wasn't sure that other teams wouldn't trade up above us at 10. Anyway, those kind of talks fell through, and as it kind of fell, it almost fell perfectly, because more running backs were signed. The interest in the position wasn't as high as I initially thought. So I started looking else. I thought, we can't just have one player on the board, because he could go, or you've got to do your due diligence. You've got to scout the whole class, really. So I've talked to Connor Weston, Dustin Zek. Dustin Zek's a great guy. That's a really good pick for London.
I like Dustin a lot.
The only thing holding him back was his build for the type of running back we wanted wasn't. It just wouldn't have been as effective enough even in the first season, where we know we're probably gonna not have the we're not gonna have the best running game in the league. It's unrealistic to expect that, but. And then I hadn't even spoken, so we ended up picking Scott Johnson. I hadn't even spoken to Scott at all until I did an interview with him for the website. I don't know if you read any of the Rookie Rendezvous interviews, and he did one with him. There was him, Dustin, and Ezekiel Love, and it was just something about Scott that really impressed me, because I went through a weekend where I was really busy, so I couldn't ask them any more questions. And within the chat, within the interview, Scott just started interviewing the other two guys to keep it going, and asking them really, really intelligent questions. And I was like, "Wow, that it just stood out. It impressed me." And then I kind of put his name on the back burner. And then we got to the week of the draft, and I thought, "Why haven't I interviewed Scott about, coming to Vegas?" Because I looked at his build, and I know we shouldn't always look at, no one really took notice of the stats in the minor league, but it says a few things that if you are doing well in the minor league, your build is halfway decent. And build does come into it on some level. It's not like we just completely forget about build. And I looked at his build, and his actual stats, he was sharing time, but they were actually probably the best in the league in terms of, yards per carry and how effective he was when he had the ball. And add to that the fact that he was a really good guy. He's really knowledgeable about the game in general. Him and Jess are now scouting for us, and they're doing an amazing job. So, the fact that he's a scout is and pushed to do that is worth a second round pick for me anyway. Scott was once I've got talking to Scott, it was kind of a no-brainer, really. The build was right. He's a great guy, so we just thought, right, we're not going to wait. We're not going to mess around. We're going to take him. and we did. And then everyone thought we were going to get Fox, but Scott's. There was a number of factors, and obviously it wasn't just my decision. It was, you know, the entire staff room at Vegas came together, and we had a bit of a debate, and then Scott came out as the preferred option. And then I was surprised to get Frank late in the second. I was very surprised. I thought he'd have gone by then.
Right.
And as I'm sure we'll talk about later, the change in the rule made us able to sort of gave us the ability to take him.
Oh yeah.
And I wasn't missing that chance. Frank's already he's already proven his worth in the locker room. He's another really good guy, really easy to work with, really sort of passionate about. I think he really wants to advance himself to become an owner one day, which I think is great. And you know, he wants to use my knowledge, he wants to use our coach's knowledge to help him do that. His ability with graphics is invaluable. So he's done a lot of the graphics that we've posted on social media. He found a font. Well, him and I'll give John the owner credit as well, because he was moaning at me the other day about this. But he's found a font in Discord, and I like the idea of everyone in the team having the same font. When we're in general, and I think it sums up Vegas really well. And he's proven his worth, definitely. And then we took Tank Hutt in round three. We had to go primary, and there was a bit of a debate whether we were going to go defensive tackle or defensive end.
That's right. Yeah. You had to go. Yeah.
We had to, again, round three, we had to take a primary position. So we, but I mean, it didn't make, I was worried there was going to be a really big run on defensive line players at the start of the round three. Mm-hmm. Luckily there wasn't, and it's quite funny actually. I actually fell asleep during round three, and I woke up about 3 minutes before the pick. So you know, people were panicking, what we're going to do, and I was like, and yeah, we got Tank, which I thought was a really good pick up. Tank's always checking in the locker room every day. He's one of those who doesn't always, he's not there all day, but when he types something, it's a long paragraph when he tells you about his day and his, you know, his,
okay,
and you know, I don't know if you've got any of those in Lone Star, but you know, he checks in every now and again, and I think Tank's, you know, gonna really grow into this role as well. Mm-hmm. And I think he's gonna be in the league for a long time. And obviously we go to the supplemental, which again we'll talk about later, but in terms of the picks, we got AK Jones at defensive tackle. Thomas Smith called it the steal of the draft, which I think is, you know, he should be up there, because I was, again, very surprised to get him at defensive tackle that late. Because we nearly took him in round three.
Oh.
Very close. Yeah. I think AK was someone I hadn't spoken to, and then I think he was on Ashley Jackson's podcast, and I just thought, you know what, I'm going to get in touch, because you know, he sounded like a really cool guy, and I've already spoke to him, and he's very keen on how he's going to progress his player and become the best he can be, which is great. We took Eric Davis, who's Dustin Zek's best friend, linebacker. Oh. And Eric's a great person, always checking in, good sense of humour, Browns fan, which is excellent. Actually, Jess is a. I seem to have picked a load of Browns fans for some reason.
Yes, you have. Yeah.
Yeah, which wasn't intentional. I mean, I'm a Browns fan as well, if you didn't know.
That just tells you they've got some strength of character to perseverance. So
yes, yeah, we could go 1-11 this season in Vegas, and they'd still stick around.
That's important. That is important.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, there's some stoicism there. And then we got Doug Britton with fullback in round seven, and you know, Doug's again really cool guy. Really, he said before that he couldn't check in with as much because of his job, but actually he's been really active. So I've been kind of he's been a really nice surprise. So yeah, well,
you know, Doug was my receiver in San Jose. Did we chat about him? Or was it somebody else? I was doing some last minute stumping for some of my guys, and I don't remember if you and I talked about Doug or if it was somebody else.
Maybe. I know there were a couple of guys who you put me in touch with, or asked me to get in touch with, and Doug could well have been one of them, but I think I'm pretty sure he put himself out there anyway. And then fullbacks is one of those where, to be honest, Doug was in my top two anyway, so I was really happy to get him. I had a board of maybe like 10 guys who wanted to play fullback for us, and Doug was at least in the top two. It was definitely in the top two of them. And so yeah, I was, again, all 7 picks, really happy. The rest of the staff are happy. I just want to basically create a legacy in Vegas that'll last at least 2 or 3 seasons.
That's fantastic. Yeah, no, I like that. Well, and I'll tell you, just from getting to know you, but then seeing some of your picks and all of that stuff, there's not really any team in the league that I just go meh and I don't pay attention to. But Vegas has moved up. Like last season, I watched every Sioux Falls game. I loved their game. I loved what they did. All of that stuff. There are teams you watch. Yeah. And in fact, some of what I'm trying to do in preparation for the season with Lone Star is it's going to look a lot like Sioux Falls. And anyone looking at us can tell by how we built the team that's a place. Yeah. So obviously, I watch the Sioux Falls all the time. I don't think I missed any Baltimore games last season. But Vegas has jumped up as a team just because of getting to talk to you and getting to know you, but also seeing what you guys have started to build there. It's a very intriguing team to me, and I want to see what happens. So that's going to be must-see TV, as they used to say, for me this season. Here's watching Vegas. I'm not going to miss any of those games because it's going to be fun to see the development there.
Well, actually, there's no point me. I was going to plug a scrimmage we've got, which is later today, but I don't know when you're going to put this interview out, but it's...
I'll put it out as soon as I can. The scrimmage may happen before this gets out, but...
Yeah, well, either way, it's today at 3. For you, yourself, it's at 3 p.m. Eastern.
I'll be watching it. We have one after that, so I'll be watching yours, cool. And then I'll watch ours, yeah.
It'll be on the Las Vegas Fury YouTube channel.
Awesome. I think I'm following that already. I'll have to double check. If I'm not, I will be. But I think I might be following that already.
Yeah, and we've got a game against Louisiana, so see how the generic playbook ruins the game plan again.
Yeah, anyone listening, don't get too fired up about these scrimmages. There's no game planning going on. It's pretty much generic playbook.
I said to ours, it's just a way of ironing out the kinks in terms of, you know, like player equipment. Yeah. And we had 2 players who, for whatever reason, their skin tone was wrong, swapped almost. So you know, that would have been a bit of a disaster had that happened week one. So it's just a really good way of ironing out those little kinks.
Yeah. Well, and it's always fun, especially for new players. But it's going to be fun for me to see my. You know, I've been in the league this season now. You know, but I'm going to love seeing. I've been doing so many scrimmages. My eyes have gone cross-eyed, but to see myself on the screen. Somebody else doing all that stuff. It's just fun to do. But I love it that we're doing so many scrimmages this year.
Because in the past we've always had official preseason games 1 week, but are they just not doing that this year because so many teams are organizing their own scrimmages?
I don't know, actually. I haven't been, I don't know.
Because I haven't had word, I haven't had any notice that we're having a preseason game, so.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. That's a good point.
What about because I know on our list of things we've got how Lone Star played the draft as well, so why don't we address that?
Sure. Well, again, I guess a little bit of drama, I suppose, or controversy, for lack of a better word, with how we played the draft. I know some people said but we played it. I can't argue that we did. We didn't set out to do it, though, is the thing. Early on, when Charles first told me
hey, I just bought a team. Wally and I bought Seattle. We'd like for you to join us. We want you and Doug to come join us. Wow, yeah, okay. And he said, we want to bring in good people. He goes, we'll figure out how it fits later. We just want to bring in some good people. Who are some people that you know? And I said, Dave, immediately. I said, Yogi Bar, immediately. I gave him a list of people that I knew were our kind of people. We got most of them. Yeah. And we had the same process in the draft. We were looking at the people. Ace was my quarterback with San Jose. So obviously we got to talk a lot. And very quickly, I said, Charles, I think this is our guy. He's a Lone Star kind of guy. And then Charles chatted with him and agreed. And so that was, and it's funny because some of the same people that I saw kind of losing their minds that we didn't take a running back until the seventh round were saying that we could have taken Ace later. You know, they were saying we could have played it differently and we could have taken Ace later. And
I liked it. Personally, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I thought that, I mean, and we did have the discussion because we liked Thomas Smith very quickly early. And we had the discussion that with the market the way it was, with the draft the way it was, which is part of what we're all talking about here today, we could probably have gotten Ace in the second round, maybe even the third round. I don't know. The conversation was had, but we felt like we just wanted to do it. I almost felt like Ace deserved to be our first pick because he was on board with Lone Star immediately. He said to me more than once.
Sorry to interrupt. It's almost like a tribute to the player in a way.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
And so obviously happy with Ace. I think Katie Gage said it was the worst kept secret in the league. Was right.
Eddie's eyes when we picked Otis because I know he wanted Jess to fall. You could see his eyes just.
Yeah, he liked Jess.
Yeah, you know that song, is it like, Hello Darkness, My Old Friend? I feel like that could have been played over Eddie's reaction.
I've gotten to know Eddie a lot more lately. I always had respect for him, I always liked him, but I've enjoyed getting to know to know him. But you brought up a good point. Part of your picking Jess was that he was actually a pretty valuable, other people saw his value as well. You may not have been able to wait later to take him.
Yes.
And we rolled the dice a little bit with Thomas that might happen. Now there were other prospects, free safety prospects or getting a free safety later, what have you. There were things we could have done. Like you said, you got to have more than one guy on your board. We had several. We had plans in place. So we rolled the dice a little bit that Thomas would still be there second round. Obviously, we got him. We were thrilled by that. That was the pick that I was the most, I personally was the most nervous about. We got Ace. Huh?
I was going to say, did you speak to Thomas and ask him, you know, have any other teams sort of showed interest for the first round pick?
Oh, yeah, we talked. I left the bulk of that stuff to the brains, Charles, and to a lesser extent, Dave. That was just a shot at Dave. He was part of the brains. Love you, Dave. Just giving you crap. The bulk of that. But I did chat with guys. Partly because I wanted to let them know that we were all excited about them, and I even told Thomas as we got closer and closer, I just said, you know what, I don't like playing games with people.
Yeah. Right?
And so we were talking, you and I were DMing, and we were talking about targets in the supplemental. And I just said, hey, this is what we're going to do. So you don't have to worry about me snaking one of your guys. This is what we're going to do. I just like doing that. Now, obviously, there's people in the league that I don't know as well, and I would just be like, I'm not really going to let that go. You'll find out. But I don't like playing games. So having said that, in some of my conversations with Thomas, early on, Thomas was chatting with me just about football stuff, league stuff. And it was just, there was no agenda behind this conversation. It was just getting to know people, getting to know the league. And I like it. I thought, hey, I like this guy.
I think he was the first rookie that I had on my board. I mean, it was tricky because we didn't need a safety.
Right.
But, you know, early on, I was talking to Thomas a lot and I was really impressed by him. And I said to him, look, if you're there in the third round, then just, if you're willing to play linebacker or something, then, you know, we're going to take it. Mm-hmm. But it soon became apparent that that wasn't going to happen. It wasn't going to fall that far.
Yeah, I don't think, yeah. Yeah, I mean, my guess is he wouldn't have fallen very far in the second round if we hadn't taken him. And I could be wrong, but that was a concern because I really didn't want to lose that. He started doing his stuff, that scouting stuff, and he right from the bat was telling me that Ace was his number one prospect in the entire draft. And I told him, I said, yeah, he's mine too. You know, I didn't say, I don't remember when I said he's Lone Star's target, but I said he's mine too. I said there's nobody else in the draft that I want as much as I want Ace. So, you know, thrilled that we got Thomas, obviously. Hugo, we were crushed when we got moved up into the second round and we weren't going to be able to get Hugo as a defensive tackle.
Yeah.
So when that rule changed, when that rule was changed and he was back as a possibility, very excited. Hugo's another guy, you know, he's a Lone Star kind of guy. And again, we wanted to have a full star defensive line. He was down to play there. So bing, bang, boom, first three rounds, our first three picks before the supplemental, our only pick before the supplemental, we got everyone we wanted.
You can't ask for more, really, can you?
Exactly. And this is where I'll say, as I'm sure everybody can say, there were dozens of really great prospects that as air quotes consolation prizes, you wouldn't have thought of as consolation prizes. They were fantastic guys. The guys you picked would have been great guys for Lone Star. I've said Mike Quinsgrew more than once. Ross Napoli, which I knew was going to fall to us anyway. But Ross Napoli's a friend of mine from our time at San Jose and just from chatting afterwards. There's just tons of guys. There's guys I haven't even mentioned. All would have been fantastic prospects. But you have to pick. You have to zero in on who you want. And for us to get everybody that was number one.
Kind of everyone.
Yeah. It was wonderful. It was a real blessing. And I know I'm not going to take that for granted because I know that's rare to have that happen. And then, here's where perhaps the controversy rolls in. We knew months ago who our supplemental picks were going to be. We just didn't know what positions they were going to be because of what we might be doing elsewhere.
That's quite a nice position to be in, really.
Well, and I will say, because it'll come up, because people talk about the rules and the system and all of that stuff. The league said from the beginning this was a one-time thing with the supplemental draft and everything.
Yeah.
And for us and St. Louis, I think for the main culprits, for lack of a better word, for all three of our supplemental to be silver players. That probably feels a little hard to take for some people.
It's one of those situations where, you know what, it can be hard to take, but I mean, you just hold your hands up and say, you know what, you've put a plan in place, you've executed that plan perfectly. I mean, as soon as I saw that you had, you know, it's not an accident that you picked the offensive line players before the supplemental draft. You know, it's not an accident that those guys were signed before the supplemental draft. Because one, it meant you could take advantage of the bonus properly, mm-hmm. with you know, if you'd have done it the other way around and you'd have got these three players who obviously, you know, people didn't know the names of, if you'd have done it the other way around and taken a, or signed or taken a halfback, a, what were the other two positions? Sorry, was it?
Tight end and fullback. Tight end and fullback, what we took in the supplemental.
Yeah. Tight end and fullback. If you'd have taken them or signed them pre-supplemental and then signed three offensive line players in the supplemental, but it's silver value, people would be like, well, people would probably be the other way and say you've missed an opportunity. Yeah. So, you know, to me, I don't feel, you know, offended by what you did. I think, in a way, I think one of the Scouts Inc. guys said the draft plan, A+, you know, the execution of it, A+. Nobody really knows these players who you drafted in the supplemental, but you know what? If you've, the evidence is that you guys can plan out a great team and you do draft, you have drafted and you've signed really, really good people. These three will be the same because you know who you look, you know what you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and all three of them have connections. Adam, the tight end, is one of Dave's very best friends.
It was quite funny actually because there was loads of mock drafts sending Adam to Vegas. And I was like, I've never even heard of Adam Williams. Who's this Adam Williams guy? And no, right. Dave messaged me like, you don't want to know who Adam Williams is. Just ignore that name. Forget he exists. I was like, all right, Dave.
Nothing to see here. Yeah, well, and I thought Adam was the biggest question because he played defensive tackle in the minors, and I knew that was a position. And I'm just gonna say I don't like playing games. There are some defensive tackles that I didn't see as good prospects. So I thought Adam was possibly going to be a hot prospect there, and he made me nervous. The fullback, Cameron Collier, is one of my best friends. He lives 30 minutes away from me. I've known him for quite a while now. And I was surprised when he first talked about joining the league. But he became interested because, for one, I was talking about it all the time. And it's funny, I was listening to a psychologist or someone the other day. He talked about how you know when someone's a real friend. It's when one of the things you talk about is when they celebrate the things you're excited about. And so Cameron, who's not particularly a sports fan in general, became excited about my excitement about the league. And he heard me talk about these guys and again, the brotherhood, the camaraderie. And he thought, I think I might like to be part of that. And he was asking me some questions, and then he joined up, and I said, "Well, shoot."
Yeah, that's quite rare as well. You know, I mean, especially being in the UK, where you know football, American football is not the most popular sport. Mm-hmm. Not only have you got, you know, if I tell someone about this, then I mean, my dad's really interested. He's actually we share Spotify, and he stumbled across my interview with you last time. And he was downstairs. He's probably downstairs listening to it as we speak, actually. And he just put his head around the door. It's like, is that you? Can I hear your voice coming through Spotify? A lot of friends. You know, if you sort of don't want to mention it because they look at you like, what? So you don't actually play.
Yeah.
You don't actually get a controller and play. Because you know, all my mates are all massive FIFA fans, and if they're gonna play a game, it's FIFA. And people seemingly struggle without actually coming and seeing the league, struggle to understand the concept of it.
Oh yeah.
So it's quite a rare thing to get someone, especially someone who doesn't particularly like sport, to be excited about something that you know is a bit of an alien thing.
Well, and I think you touched on one of the strengths of the league that people might not realize from the turf. The league is more. This is not just a football game.
No.
It's a community, and I've used the phrase being part of something larger than yourself several times. That's one of the things that appeals to me so much about the league. It's part of why I'm enjoying Lone Star so much. I like being part of Lone Star. I like being part of the league. And I think that's something, like my friend Cameron, I think that was the appeal. Not the football, not the video game. The camaraderie. And so
that's what keeps people here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you look at the wide variety of people we have. I mean, where else do you have an opportunity for we've got several people with some pretty significant disabilities in their life.
Yep.
Where else do they get to do something like this? Here they're stars. Here they get to be part of something again. Bigger than themselves, they get to make an impact.
that's the thing about this league as well, that, you know, there is judgment, because anytime you get a group of people or a community, there will be judgment, but you are judged based on your words and your actions and who you are, rather than just on appearance. There is no judgment based on appearance here, which just means people can be more open, be more themselves, even if they want to, like one of the defensive tackles who was selected in the first round, play a character, almost. And, you know, there's just so many ways to get enjoyment out of it, and it's a very inclusive place.
Yes.
Is probably its major strength.
Well, and it feels like an increasingly rare quality outside of the league. We've become very tribal, and it's very difficult. And finding common ground is becoming increasingly important, I think. And then before I forget, I want to touch our last pick, Ike. I saw people like, you know, people like Ike, and we were joking about this the whole time. People were going to go, Ike? Who's Ike? Ike is Charles' sister-in-law. She's been a fan of the league for a while. She's been following the league for a while. And she's fantastic in the locker room. She holds her own with all of the nutcases that we've got in there. And we're thrilled to have her. And
where's the name come from then? What's the story behind Ike McBride? I'm presuming that's not her real name.
No. It is, I haven't asked her directly. Charles players, his Pseudo Nakai character was, I'm probably going to bungle this, but it's family members. It's like the initials of family members put into a name. And Ike has talked about her mother, and I don't want to say more any more than what I know, because I don't want to disrespect anything there. But I'm going to let her. I know what her name is, but I'm not going to put it out there unless I don't know that.
So you're happy to put mine out there. I'm only messing.
I know. Well, it was that whole happy treason day or whatever. No, I'm kidding. Which, by the way, that was hilarious. No, I just don't know. I don't know all the details. But she is honoring her mother with her person in belief. And so I don't know exactly what the connection, what the name is about, but that's at least what it's, that's the outline of what it's about. And perhaps I do intend to have her on the show, and perhaps she'll flesh that out more for people. But I want to allow her to do that. So.
Yeah.
We've known we were going to take her for a while, and especially her and Cameron, their positions have changed several times. They were defensive tackles, both defensive tackles at one point. Cameron was like, "So what am I playing this week?" And I was like, "I think free safety, possibly cornerback." You know, and I, in fact, he even made a crack before the draft. He said, "So what am I?" You know, before the fifth round.
I suppose that's one advantage of him not being a massive sports fan, is that he maybe doesn't have a tie to a particular position. He's not that, he just wants to be in the league. He doesn't really care whether he's an offensive line player or a quarterback.
He would have played offensive line if we asked. He would have done anything we asked. And that's also valuable. And I don't judge. I've said in several different shows, I don't judge people for wanting to play star positions. You know, if somebody says, we'd like to be a quarterback, I don't go, oh, well, you're an idiot, you know, or you're a jerk or anything. I'd say, like, sure, yeah. I get it. We just don't need a quarterback. Good luck, you know. But yeah, that's a kind of a breakdown of all of our picks. We expect to re-sign all of them next season.
That's great.
Have them for quite a while. And so when you look at it that, and I don't think anybody, I think whoever got the lowest, I think the team that got the lowest draft grade is probably going, no, come on, we nailed it. And they may well feel that way. And so, you know, I don't remember what the guys gave us. I remember Eagle having, he just said he didn't know the rest of the league or the rest of our players very much, and so that's why it was as low as it was.
Yeah, it was a B.
Oh yeah, yeah. I wasn't mad about that because, of course, he doesn't know.
It's consistent reasoning. It was consistent reasoning through the whole thing. So
yeah,
you know, they can't exactly say, oh, because Lowestar had a plan all along, therefore they must be great people. Like, you don't know them, right. So.
Right. You've got no way to know. Yeah.
I think this leads on to nicely one of the things on our list of things to talk about, which was how much should we care about? So, how much should we care about contract value and what value is in a rookie? You know, what do you value from a rookie? And I think this is something that the GMs talked about on Dave's show, and there's a lot of focus on. There's a lot of focus with these, especially with these supplemental picks being silvers, like about the value of their contract and compared to maybe, so compared to the running back that we took, which is who is a bronze, Scott. And I couldn't help thinking, well, Scott's contract and his value is not where his value lies. That's just it's almost like a construct of the league that he needs a contract and we're going to try and help him progress his player. Obviously, it's important on the field, but,
right.
You know, I don't think that we've had any worse of a draft because we've had to draft a running back in the second round and not got a silver. To me, the contract value is by far secondary to the value of the person. And because the thing is, if Scott sticks around for three seasons, by season three, he will likely be, well, I mean, if he could carry on progressing, he'd be a gold easily. But, and he will be that kind of, he will still be a great person and be a great player on the field. Now, he could be. I mean, he could. We've seen Coppers do really well. Coppers have made the Pro Bowl. Coppers have made All-Star games. Nathan Blake, who's Gerald Smith's player, when he first came to London, he was a Copper free safety, made 13 interceptions or something like that.
Right.
So I just think there's a lot of folk, as much as we push the narrative that it's about the person, and everyone pushes, I feel like everyone's on the same boat with that, really. There's still a lot of talk about, oh, you know, contract value. And whilst it's important, I think sometimes that means we get away from, right, was that a good pickup because he can reach max value, or is it a good pickup because they will stay with you for at least two seasons? And I think we sometimes lose sight of what the value is in a player.
No, I agree. And I think that you have to take a big picture view on those things. I get why, you know, you'll see people, if you're only looking at on-field results immediately, then you're going to pick the highest value contract player you can get every spot you pick. But I think that if you do that, you're going to find yourself, and this may come across, you know, because I haven't been in the league that long, but I just have a feeling that if that's all you're ever doing, if you're hunting contract value, then you're not going to keep your team together because if you're hunting contract value and if they're hunting contract value, come the off season, they're going to go for their best value. And if you say, hey, you know, we've got this other player we'd like to take, would you cut an animation if you burned an animation? And if somebody says no, which is their right to do, but
it happens.
Yeah, absolutely, it happens. You see players move all the time. I know we had guys message Lone Star that say, hey, you know, I'm willing to cut one animation, but I'm going to keep the other.
Yeah.
Probably can guess who that, you know. And it's fine for them to come from that perspective, but that tells us something about their perspective. And if a team is doing the same, I don't think they can keep those teams together all the time.
If you look at the history of the league, as someone who's been here for, you know, five seasons, six seasons, mm-hmm. teams that stay together are the ones that win. Sioux Falls, for instance. Sioux Falls, I think they've only missed the playoffs one time mm-hmm. since I joined the league. Now, they had a big draft in season 11. They traded back so they could get more picks. This was in the days before.
Okay.
You had two picks. It was two rounds. You had two picks, and then everyone else was undrafted free agent.
Okay.
And you could only sign them at base copper, basically. Okay. That was the rule, and that's kind of where this the 5-point cap rule came in, which I'm sure we'll talk about soon.
Yep, that's on the list. Yep.
But Sioux Falls traded back in season 11 and they took four players. Now, I'm pretty sure maybe one or two aren't, but I'm pretty sure they stayed with them and they're still with them. And Sioux Falls' retention is so good mm-hmm. every season. They are always in the playoffs, pretty much. And now you see the rewards being reaped from it because, you know, they got to the championship game, the many people's favourites to go on and win the thing this season. Mm-hmm. And it was the same again in the offseason. They retained everyone. Mm-hmm. I don't think they made one signing from free agency.
I don't think so.
And it was the same with Florida when they were. They still have really good player retention, but mm-hmm. you know, they won three championships in a row, and they kept their team together. It didn't really matter about contract value and things like that. They were a team unit, and to me, it rings true that when that happens, success follows. It's rare that mm-hmm. unsuccessful teams stay together every season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. You have a lot of turnover. I think that's a universal trait. If you've got a business with a lot of turnover, you're probably not as successful as you want to be. I know that the school district, there's been schools that I've been in, the schools that were able to hold on to their teachers and their staff for the most part, had more cohesiveness. They worked together better. The schools that were just a revolving door weren't as successful. And, you know, I know you're in education. You may be able to corroborate that. I just think that's a universal trait, that when you have that organizational consistency, you're better off in the long run. And so, and that goes back to our original point. If you're hunting contract value only on either side of the coin, as an organization or as a player, I think you're probably going to shortchange the overall experience.
Definitely.
I will always take a pay cut for my team for someone else. I'll do what it takes to bring in good people. And the fact is, I think virtually every player on Lone Star is of that same mindset. I know that a lot of our guys, because, you know, we gave everybody max contracts because we had the space. And they were all saying, you know, the guys that had animations were like, oh yeah, I'll cut my animations for the team. And Charles was going, actually, we don't need you to. We're going to end up with a whole bunch of cap space anyway. And this is before we knew that we were going to get to boost people to supplemental. We just thought we were just going to go in at a massive deficit. We just expected to come in at a massive deficit. Because we were hunting people. We were going for people. My son, I never knew I wanted, Liam Hammer, said you can build a player, but you can't build a person.
So true.
So I'm very proud of that boy. I wish he actually was my son, but, you know, whatever.
that's high praise. That is high praise indeed. Yeah. Master Star changed his name to Liam Hammer Craven, something like that.
Well, I think he, for a while in the sandbox, he had Craven, the illegitimate son, or something like that. I'm not sure. not sure. Okay, I was looking. I derailed myself.
We have a long list.
We do. Well, okay. We were talking about the supplemental value within a rookie, how much we care about contract value, is what we were just talking about. And you mentioned the within the 5-point cap rule. And
yes,
I was actually unaware of that until Charles was looking at what our values were going to be with the contract. And then he said something about being able to give people a little bonus. And I said, I actually, full disclosure, I got a cap bonus or a contract bonus, which felt a little funny to me because I hadn't earned it yet. Progression had got me to this point. I'd signed for what I'd progressed. As far as I was concerned, I'd gotten my max value. So when I got to bump up a little bit, okay, that's cool. And it actually bumped me up a tier. It basically advanced me a week of progression, because after 1 week of progression, I was going to go up from copper to bronze. Now I'm just starting at bronze.
So you can go for animations now even.
Yeah, plan is not to do that. We're going to build the player, but yeah.
So I've got mixed feelings about this rule. So for those people who don't know, I call it the 5-point cap rule. I don't know what the actual rules, the name of the rule is, but basically, if, as I understand it, if a team after signing at everyone isn't within 5 points of the overall cap, then then they get a 0.5 point bonus per player or something. Mm-hmm. Something like that. And I've got mixed feelings. So I get it, I understand why, and I think for new teams it's something that I've got no problem with. New teams like Lone Star, like Portland, like Fort Worth, I've got no problem with them using that rule.
Mm-hmm.
Because to get off the ground, to make it fun, new teams need all the help they can get. The only issue is, because every team can take advantage of it, it kind of feels like it rewards bad retention, it rewards bad recruitment. It gives teams a bit of a pass because they might not have reached cap. Say they've been in the league for 2 or 3 seasons, they haven't reached cap because either they haven't drafted well, they haven't thought about their roster well enough, so the numbers haven't added up correctly. Just things like that, which for in Vegas we made sure that we were 0.01 away from the cap. We were as close as we could possibly get. And it kind of makes you think, well, each player could have, I know everyone moves to the same cap value, but I could have just made a right mess of it and still got a bonus anyway. Especially when you take into account the order of the supplemental draft, which again I would change myself, and the bonus, the fact that teams with more cap space picked first, and I just think it, because I used to call it the Oklahoma City rule.
Okay.
So, were you around when Oklahoma City were a franchise?
Well, I came in season 13. Wait, we're going into 15. Yeah, I came in season 13 as a non-contract, and Oklahoma City was still there. Because that's what Eddie bought and moved to Arizona, right? He bought Oklahoma City and moved to Arizona.
Yes. I don't really know, but yes, we'll go with that.
Oklahoma City went away and Arizona came into existence either way.
Basically, it was after my first season, season 11. We had a draft in season 11, and this again was 2 rounds. You had 2 picks unless you traded for more, and everyone else you signed was an undrafted free agent. Now, most teams that recruited well didn't need to use maybe 1 or 2 undrafted free agents. Now, this is back in the days when you only had 12 positions as well.
Right.
You could only fill 12 star spots. Now, there was less players in the league, granted, but if you did a good job, you would be able to fill those 12. And the rule was brought in because Oklahoma City, and I think there might have been a couple of other teams, struggled with retention, or and being able to sign new players. So they had to take a lot of undrafted free agents, which again were base copper value. So they were way below cap, and the league was brought in as a way of making it fair, basically, and you know, giving more parity to the, because in theory the product wouldn't be very good if Oklahoma City were getting smashed every week.
Right.
And I get it. I understand why. You know, you want to put a fair product out there, and you want to, you know, think every team has a chance to make the playoffs. But again, when you work so hard to get to the cap and build the team as well as you can, it does almost feel a little bit of a kick in the face in a way. Not for the new teams. New teams use it, or new teams definitely. But you know, if say Lone Star had a really bad off season next season and had to use the rule again, that's when I'd be like, got a slight issue with it.
Sure. No, I get that. That makes sense. I didn't know the genesis for that rule. I didn't know where that came from. So thank you for the history lesson. As a history major, I appreciate history lessons. And I can't say I disagree with you, because that would be, why would you put it? It's like anything else. If you're going to work and earn a paycheck and all of that stuff, and somebody else isn't going to work as much, but you've got to share, you know, they get the same amount of money as you, that's going to make you feel a little bit resentful. So
yeah, and again, you know, it's not, if you know, I don't feel full resentment, because in theory, if I've had a really good off season, then I've got the best players in terms of who they are as people as well. I haven't had to almost, I don't want to use this phrase, but scrape the bottom of the barrel. And you know, that team might, even with using that bonus, they might have had to just get whoever they could without really knowing who these people are. So in the end, those that draft well and those that have good off seasons win. But it's just it just doesn't sit quite right with me.
I get it. Yeah.
And especially, like, if we move on to the supplemental draft, my opinions on that this season is, because this is, again, something that's not happened before. Mm-hmm. And probably won't happen again.
No, probably not.
And the way I would have done it, I would have done the supplemental draft differently.
Okay. I want to just find out how you felt about that.
So people were talking about this. A lot of people have been talking about the supplemental draft as a way of helping new teams, right? Mm-hmm. To build their roster. Now, I don't see the supplemental draft as that. To me, it's a way of expanding the league.
Mm-hmm.
The league is going through mass expansion for the future. You know, I imagine they're going to expand the rosters to more players on a roster in future. This is a way of just sort of, rather than going up a really steep stair, going up, on a slightly more gradual gradient, and if you know what I mean, by having three supplemental players who don't count towards the cap, but are still on the roster and can stay on the roster and progress and get into the league. So it's more of a league-wide thing for growth rather than just for the new teams. Now, what I would have done is, so the teams with less cap, sorry, the teams with more cap space can use the bonus. It was likely that those teams with more cap space can use the bonus because they've maxed out and they still haven't reached near cap. They're already getting advantage that way, in a way. The supplemental draft has already been kinder to them than it is to everyone else because of that, which is fine. But what I would have done is switched it around so that if you had got to the cap, or you got really close to the cap, you would go first. Because you've got less sort of cap to work with, and you might not be able to give a bonus like ourselves, and the supplemental draft in a way isn't as lucrative for you, but you get as a counter to that, you get the pick of the players. Whereas what happened was, the teams that could used the bonus also got the pick of the best players that were available.
Right.
And so to me, it would have been a bit more fair to switch it around and say, those that have hit cap perfectly, you can go first, and then we'll go from there on in. And to me, that's what, because considering you couldn't trade up or anything, you were stuck to your place.
Yeah,
I think that would have been a better system personally. But again, it's an unprecedented thing. It was planned very quickly, and you know the draft still went well. So I'm not sort of gonna step on them too much.
Sure. No, I get it. And I see your point, because there were some real quality. Well, there were some first, second round, however you want to view the value of those things. There were some high value players in the supplemental draft, just because.
Oh God, yeah.
And so, with it being that way, because there were a couple of teams that were high in the first four rounds because of their record, but yes, their cap space, they didn't have enough cap space because they re-signed everyone or whatever. And so if they almost got bit, I think it could be argued they almost got bit on both ends. And we haven't quite touched on this that much, but the draft was a little bit upside down. And I've said this before, and this is not to take away from first round picks, and I can see people being upset about it, but the real value, if you're just talking cap value, check-in value, all of that stuff, the real value came in the third and fourth round.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And so and especially if that's what you were hunting completely, like we were talking about, then we were in fantastic shape. So imagine you're a team that didn't win very much last year, and you have a high pick, but you don't have a cap space. You're basically getting the short end on both ends of the draft under that system. Because you're picking late in the supplemental because you've used up all your cap space. You're picking early in a draft that is upside down in terms of value.
I mean, again, I just want to say, you know, for those players who might be listening who got taken at the bottom of the supplemental rounds, this isn't anything to do with you saying you guys weren't as valuable. I mean, because the three guys, in the end, the three guys that I wanted, I got in the supplemental draft, which was great. You know, we got lucky. You know, AK Jones for me was going to go early round five, and he fell to round six to us, which was, I didn't see it coming. And my point is, it's just, I just want to say, you know, it's more about the structure of the draft rather than the moaning about the fact that I didn't have as many players to pick from. Because at the end of the day, the guys that we picked, I'd already spoken to a lot. I made sure they wanted to come to Vegas more than anywhere else.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of the reason why we got them. So, you know, if you do a good job, then in the end, it all works out. But it's just, I don't know. I would just like to have seen it flipped around.
Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah. I don't have an argument with it. And like you said, it's a one-time thing. It was an adjustment that we had to make on the fly. I will say here that I've heard some criticism of the league from friends. That is not, they're not wrong, but I kind of sit there and I go, okay, I'm going to listen to you. We're going to be a good friend and I hear you, but I also kind of want to smack you a little bit because the league is having to adapt to this stuff. We've had explosive growth. We've had a lot of things happen. Some things you can't prepare for. And so it frustrates me to see some of the frustration with the league that has popped up.
Because the end of the day, no one in, I wouldn't do a better job. No way.
No. Oh God.
No way. I would hate to be, as much as I'm sure it's exciting for Carmen, for Andy and those at the top, I wouldn't like to be in that position. I struggled being an owner, let alone being in charge of the whole league and trying to keep everyone happy. So In the end, they've done a great job. The draft production was great. I thought the panels were good. You know, there were some people who had voices that you haven't heard or faces you haven't seen, mm-hmm. and they did a really good job of analysing whether, you know, I like the fact that some people came at it from an SFL perspective, some people came at it from a more traditional, mm-hmm. I guess you would say, football perspective.
Mm-hmm. Variety to the experience at the time.
Yeah. And it was, at the end of the day, it's about entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
And there was drama. There was, I just think they've done a great job, and you know, you can't deny that, really. As much as we can pick holes in certain things, in the end of the day, that's just, we're all analytical people, so we're going to do that. But they've done a great job.
No, agreed. And it's been a lot of fun, and I feel blessed to be part of the league, even when things, you know, when I was kind of losing my mind that we got moved up into the second round, and I felt like that was, you know, with our third pick,
that's ridiculous.
Still feel lucky to be part of the league, and really excited.
One thing I do want to talk about, actually, is that, so obviously the late rule came in, the late rule change, mm-hmm. Where obviously at the top of the second, we can draft secondary positions, which is mm-hmm. fine. I was happy to have that rule come in. One thing that would have changed is, so obviously owners vote on all the rule changes in the league, pretty much. Right? Now, the majority of owners have a GM. Mm-hmm. I don't know how every organization works, but if it's anything like our organization, I was the one on the ground doing the groundwork for the draft. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to have had the GMs involved in that vote, because in reality it directly affects them at least as much, if not more, than some owners.
Right.
So I would have, I mean, I'm not saying the result would have been different, but you know, as John, our owner John, came to me and said, what would you choose, to inform his own personal vote, because, you know, at the end of the day, John's primarily our offensive coach. That's what he's best at, and that's what he's been he's been in the lab all off season, simming.
Right.
So, and I'm the one who's been doing the draft and picking the players and all that kind of thing. And I think it would have been good to have GM's perspective on that vote. I don't think it would have got a different perspective, but I just think it would have made more sense to get people who are directly involved with it to actually participate.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I can see that. Well, you bring up something that I thought about. And I want to try to be careful how I say this, because I'm not taking shots at anyone, and I'm not being critical. I don't want to sound too critical, because I don't know. Now, Charles has been a fantastic. He's very collaborative. We talk about things. We talk about things with the team. Gives the team a lot of input. I love that. That's one of the reasons I love him so much. But I still don't know what I don't know about something. Having said that, watching some of the rule in place, watching some of the attitude, some of the things, I feel like there are some owners who haven't quite embraced or come to the realization that the players are in fact their customers. Some of the things that they talk about, I understand you're an owner, you're trying to win, you're trying to be successful and all those things, so you have to have your guidelines in place, but I almost sometimes get, and it is a privilege to be a player in the league, and it is, but you also have to remember that people are paying to be in the league. If it were going the other way, if the money was going the other way, we somehow were so big that we were all getting paid, then some of that stuff comes into play. So some of the things with supplemental positions, talking about the draft, talking about people being locked into positions, even some of the ways that the minors were being done, there are times I just wanted to say, listen, fellas, you remember they're paying us, not me, but they're paying to be in the league. and it feels like something you're forgetting.
And yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's, well, the community, the players are part of the community. It's not like it's, you know, in the NFL where the players are the product. The community is the fans. The fans are the players. So there has to be an element of player respect, for one. There has to be an element of player power. And I think, I mean, I've not really seen it myself too much. I've not really formed too much of an opinion on, you know, if any owners have, like you say, you've forgotten that. But, you know, if they are, then they're kind of doing a disservice to themselves and the teams.
Mm-hmm.
And their players.
Mm-hmm.
One interesting thing that I wanted to talk about just before I go, because I know I've got to go soon.
Right, yeah, I know.
Was the draft in general, and again, I've got opinions on how I would have done the draft myself if now we've had time to think about it and see the dust settle and had time to sort of really formulate opinions. So, as we know, rounds one and two primary positions, other than that slight rule change, rounds three to four secondary positions, and then rounds, we had the supplemental rounds. I think I would have just had seven rounds for a start. I don't think I would have necessarily had a supplemental draft.
Okay.
I think I would have just had seven rounds. Well, I say seven rounds. As many rounds as was needed.
Okay.
And then I had this idea that you could say to each team, right, you have to pick. You'd obviously have to grade it depending on how many picks each team had. And sort of, so, you know, some teams obviously had a lot more picks than others. But, you know, it is a base sort of like idea. Okay, say every team had to pick the same amount of players. Just for instance, you would say, right, okay, we've got seven rounds. You have to pick two players at a primary position. You have to pick, I don't know, three players at a secondary position. And then there are two picks you can pick, whatever position you agree with that player. Doesn't matter if it's a primary or a secondary. Officially.
Okay.
Yet you can choose when to do this. So you can choose which round to select your primary, to select your secondary, to you know what I mean? There's no restriction on where you need to select that player in a specific position. So to me, that would again mean that those that got picked first, in theory, would be those that were the best people. So, right. For instance, I could have said, right, Jess, now I know you're a kicker in the minor leagues. Do you want, would you be willing to play a different position? And he might say yes. And then you say, right, would you be willing to, say we needed a wide receiver, would you be willing to play wide receiver? Great, I'm going to use my pick for any position on you in the first round. Do you know what I mean? But I think that would have eliminated the whole third round, fourth round is more valuable than the first round thing.
That is a very interesting take. I like it.
I mean, obviously there's probably massive wrinkles that need ironing out in that plan, because obviously, like I said, we've got some teams with three picks, some teams with two, some teams with five.
Right.
But as a base sort of idea, that's where I would have, I think that's, now I've thought about it, that's where I would have gone.
That is, that's a very interesting idea. Well, and I think it's important that you said there may be wrinkles, and you're right, there's very well be wrinkles. But you don't address those until the suggestion has been made. And so I like it. I like that a lot. Well, and I think unless they lock people into conditions all the way through the draft, which I think is a terrible idea.
Yes.
Terrible idea. The draft is always going to be a little bit, we cannot look at it as the same as you look at the NFL draft or any other sports.
Oh, no.
We just can't do it. We can't do it because, again, the money's going the other way. And, you know, that's an interesting take. I like that a lot. I would love to hear, more discussion on that.
I'm gonna sort of say more about that So I'm starting just before I go, starting an article series, a series of articles called Shady Reacts.
Uh-huh.
And basically any significant event or something that sort of takes my fancy that I've got an opinion on, or you know, I feel like I want to react to, I'm going to be writing an article about that. There's one I'm currently working on, my first one, which is about the draft, my opinions on the draft, round by round. And then I think I might do one on reacting to, much like we talked about today, reacting to maybe one of Dave Axis's shows, and sure. just things like that. So I think if anyone is interested in exploring that idea more, then I might talk about that in a future article.
Okay. Well, and I mentioned to you, I said we ought to do a regular thing. We can circle back around to it if you're down with that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, obviously, we can, you know, natter on for hours and hours and hours.
Right. Well, and there's going to be stuff. That's one of the great things about the league. It's going to keep giving us content.
Yeah. God, yes. But, yeah, so I'm sorry I've got to, you know, cut it. Well, not short, but shorter than it could have gone.
Right. Yeah, no, that's probably just as well. Because you're right. We could have gone on for a while.
Yeah, I feel like. You know, there'll be listeners now who, I don't know, have fallen asleep in the car, and they'd like to think, oh, you know, I'll just listen to it for this 40-minute journey that I've got to somewhere. And, yeah. You know, they're not even halfway through.
Well, yeah, I started out doing these really short, but people are still listening when they go longer. So I think they have to do it in chunks. But so you have to go. I know you've got stuff going on. I appreciate you taking some time, spending part of your day with me. And, God bless, man. I'm looking forward to talking to you again.
Oh, most definitely. Love to be back. Anytime where I can give my probably misguided opinion and voice it, and I'm happy to. But I guess see you soon, and I hope you had a good day yesterday.
I did. I enjoyed celebrating our treason, as you put it.
I hope that hangover pain is, you know, as painful as the loss.
It's not too bad. It's not too bad. I am going to be watching your scrimmage later, Bill. So,
yes,
I know it's just a scrimmage, but good luck. I'm rooting for you.
Thank you very much, mate. Thank you very much. You too.
All right. Have a good rest of your day, man.
Thanks, mate. See you later.
That was Slynn Shady, GM and linebacker for the Las Vegas Fury. Love doing interviews with him. We're going to have him on the show again. We're going to make it a more of a regular thing. I really enjoy his take on a lot of the topics that we face every day. We've got a lot of good shows coming up for you. At this point, I want to give another shout out to Armadillo Ale Works in Denton, Texas. They supplied Lone Star with some really nice beer for our draft party. Good stuff. I'm not a huge beer drinker myself, but the stuff we got was pretty good. I got Scrappy Boy. It's one of their products. I know some of the other guys got some of the different things. Good stuff. And if you're in the area or you're just looking for something different, because I know they'll ship it, check it out. Armadillo Ale Works in Denton, Texas. Good stuff. Nice little kind of side sponsor for Lone Star. Got to give them a shout out. Anyway, we're going to move on. We have some scrimmages to watch today. We're getting closer to the first game of the season. Very exciting. Lots and lots of players. In case you haven't been paying attention, there are 20 contracted roster spots per team. That's bigger than we've ever been. Really exciting stuff. And I am looking forward to it. This has been Coach's Corner. Thanks for joining me. And as always, good luck and God bless, my friends.